May it please the court. In my opening, I'll address the issue of St. Paul's duty to defend, and I propose to leave the issues regarding the cross appeal to rebuttal unless the court has questions concerning them. Under Texas law, insurance policies are governed by the same rules of contract construction as other contracts. And under those rules, the court's first and foremost inquiry is to ascertain the intent of the parties as expressed in the written language of the documents. Only after that has been attempted and an ambiguity has been found does the rule of contra preferentum apply such that the policy is construed strictly in favor of the insured. The operative.
I'll tell you the problem that I have with your side of the case is that even if you're right about how you construe the policy, that it's not just the amount of fees, but the presence of fees is enough to trigger the exception, you still have the circumstance that there are pleadings in there about the fact that the bank would jimmy things in a way that you didn't know what your account balance was. And whether I get charged a fee for that or not, there's a problem if I don't know how much money I have in the bank. It's hard for me to plan and know what checks I can write. So isn't that an independent injury, maybe not the predominant injury and all of that, but isn't that an independent injury that doesn't have to do with fees?
Hypothetically, it could be. On the pleadings in these cases, it is not.
Okay, why not?
The court said in the National Union case, you look to the factual allegations that show the origin of the damages. If you look to, for example, the Rigsby complaint, paragraph 1, page 612 of the record, this is a civil action seeking monetary damages, restitution, and injunctive relief arising from defendant's unfair and unconscionable assessment and collection of excessive overdraft fees.
But see, I guess the problem I have is, I mean, yes, there's a lot about fees in here. If I had to inquire what the predominant problem being argued is fees. But as you know, when you do this whole eight corners analysis and duty to defend, whatever, if there is any allegation that would give rise to coverage, you have to defend. So I don't think we just say, hey, this is about fees, and we go home. We look at these other paragraphs, and there is this allegation for which they seek damages about not knowing their account balance.
I have to disagree with you, Your Honor, on the for which they seek damages part. They explain in paragraph one what they seek damages for. They explain in their prayer what they seek recovery for. And remember that this is a class action in which the identity of the class members is defined by having been charged an overdraft fee. And it has to be that way in a class action. There is no way you could maintain a class where the allegation was, I didn't have good real-time information about what my balance was, and I was damaged by that. Because the way Mr. Jones was damaged by that and the way Mrs. Smith was damaged by that would be completely different.
But see, you're now getting into the outcome. I mean, the outcome of the case is if a class is certified, it's probably going to be certified on the fees and all of that. And maybe at some point there'd be a subsequent pleading that would drop you all. But that isn't the analysis you do on the eight corners. You don't analyze whether this is ever going to make as a class action, whether they've alleged what they need to allege, whether there might be individual problems that defeat class cert. You look at, is there an allegation here that could potentially be covered? And I'm still struggling with your argument that this thing about your account balance is not potentially covered.
Well, it would be potentially covered if it were the factual allegation on which a claim for damages or injunctive relief was based. It is not. According to paragraph one of the Rigsby complaint, there's a similar paragraph in the Durham complaint. It is not what they were basing it on. It is not part of the criterion on which class membership is decided. And the complaint, the court has to look at what the damage, what the factual allegations are underlying the claims of damage and injury. In the Gore Design case, this court noted that the court cannot hypothesize factual scenarios under which there would be coverage.
Such a brilliant statement.
Yes, one can hypothesize that someone was damaged by not having real-time information about their account balance. The only way that that is alleged in the Rigsby and Durham cases is as a predicate to a claim based on the charging of overdraft fees. And I think we have to circle around to the policy language. The policy language says claims arising out of disputes involving fees. We've cited in our brief the many cases from this court and the Texas Supreme Court construing the arising out of language, where the court says that that language need only have an incidental connection to. And the Supreme Court of Texas says it requires causation, but only but-for causation, not proximate causation. And so the question is the dispute that the Rigsby and Durham plaintiffs raise a dispute that has an incidental or greater connection to fees? And but for the claim of fees, would that dispute exist? It's as though the policy had a bank robbery exclusion that said we exclude claims arising out of disputes involving bank robbery. And the petition said, well, they cased the joint, they bought the ski masks, they hired the getaway car driver, they planned their escape route, and then they robbed the bank. Yes, there are all those other allegations in the case, but those allegations caused damage, caused injury, only because of the bank robbery. It is not alleged.
Well, but there's a general pleading for damages. I mean, so I understand you want to kind of hold them to paragraph one and walk away, but I think if you read the thing as a whole, I'm not sure they're saying, we are only saying that this account balance thing caused us damage because of fees. Because there's a lot of things, general pleading for damages, which if ambiguous, we have to construe, and you know, if there's any doubt, when in doubt, defend, another brilliant statement. And so it seems to me that if you can look at it and they are saying that this is a problem, we're not hypothesizing something that's not alleged. We're saying that an account balance, not knowing your account balance, can cause problems other than fees.
They don't say that.
Okay.
They don't say that. Yes, they pray generally for damages.
So they have to say...
They have to say...
That account balances can cause problems other than fees?
They have to say that they did cause problems other than fees. It's not enough that hypothetically...
This caused me damage, because that's a general pleading under Texas. I saw that all the time. And when I was in state court, everybody said it caused me harm, and they weren't always that specific.
Well,
we didn't say, well, you don't have a case then.
But there needed to be allegations of causation of injury that triggered the policy coverage. You can't just say...
No, you're trying... You've already said the policy coverage is triggered. You're relying on an exclusion. You have to show that the petition is entirely excluded in order to prevail. Because you're not saying is there an original claim of professional
That's
services.
Right, but the Rigsby and Durham complaints do not allege a cause of action for non-real-time balances causing injury other than fees. They don't allege that.
Okay, but if they just... cause damages generally, isn't that potentially covered?
Not absent an allegation connecting the defendant's conduct to the damage based on a legal theory.
But if there is a doubt in our mind, I mean, the problem is your duty, your burden is to show that nothing in this falls outside of the exclusion. I mean, that's the problem with exclusions, is they're even harder on the insurance company than just, well, there's no allegation that falls within the policy.
I submit that they're not, Your Honor, because under the Texas Supreme Court analysis...
The National Union and all of that, I'm not saying that we act ridiculously to find against the insurance company by any means. I get that completely. But the problem is that you're having to show... You're trying to look at paragraph one and we go home, whereas I'm saying you have to take the whole complaint, the whole petition, and say... Is there anything here that falls out? You have to show that it all falls within the exclusion. And that's the part I'm having trouble with.
Well, but to do that, I can do that by showing the absence of something that falls outside the exclusion. And that's what we think we've done here. We think there is an absence of allegations in the Rigsby and Durham cases of an injury-causing action by the bank that has caused injury other than overdraft fees. And we think that's necessarily follows from the nature of the class as defined and from the nature of a class action.
Your contention is that the real allegation is that they were wrongfully charged fees because they didn't know. One of the reasons might be that they didn't know what their balance was.
Yes.
Not knowing the balance was just a cause of the fee and not a harm in and of itself.
That is correct. There's a whole laundry list of things that the bank allegedly did that had the effect of causing them to be charged fees. The reordering of transactions, the delaying of the posting of transactions, the failure to inform the consumer that they can opt out of overdraft protection, and so on and so on. Those are means to the end in terms of the motivation of the bank, and in terms of the injury-causing event, they are the mechanisms by which the bank charged overdraft fees and thereby caused injury. I don't think you can look through the Rigsby and Durham complaints and find allegations of any injury other than the overdraft fees. And with all due respect, I don't think a generic prayer for actual damages does it, else any complaint which merely threw in that prayer could be capable of being construed as being within coverage, and I don't think that the Texas case law on mixed petitions is that broad.
Okay, I think you've covered that. Is there anything else?
I think I've covered most of the conclusions that I wanted to raise. We have here two. This is not just a fee exclusion. It is not just an exclusion of disputes involving fees. It is an exclusion of claims arising out of a broad term as defined by this court and by the Texas Supreme Court. A dispute involving fees, and involving is itself a broad word. So I think when you look at the totality of the exclusion and you apply that exclusion with its great breadth, then everything in the Durham and Rigsby cases falls within the exclusion.
All right, thank you, Mr. Young. You've saved time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Knight?
May it please the court. Steve Knight for the insured First Community Bancshares. St. Paul argues that the trial court's Eight Corners analysis was erroneous because, according to it, each and every factual allegation, each and every claim, and each and every potential for liability against First Community arises out of, is attributable to, or is based upon a fee for First Community services, those services being the overdraft services.
So can you address the exchange that I had with Mr. Young? Let's assume for the moment we accept St. Paul's construction of the policy. I know you disagree with that, but let's for the moment assume that we accept that. Do you lose?
Well, when you say accept their construction of the...
I'm not talking about their construction of the petition. Their construction
right.
of the policy being that arising out of fees means there's a dispute either about the amount or about the charging of fees at all.
So you're getting to whether there's some other damage out there, that exchange?
Yes.
Okay.
But I just had a 10-minute discussion with your opponent I thought you might want to respond to.
I do, but okay. But before I do, I will. But the one thing, the reason I had a little bit of a caveat to that is when you said their construction, I wanted to point out that they focus entirely on this notion of if a fee is alleged, then the exclusion is invoked. I don't want this court to lose sight of the fact that within the exclusion that St. Paul drafted, the fee has to be for a service. The service is the provision of overdraft protection, and I'm going to explain why that's important in just a moment. But, Your Honor, with respect to your question as far as what other damages there are, throughout these petitions, which go well beyond the opening paragraph, which really isn't even the factual allegation, it's sort of an introduction to what a general nature of the underlying class actions are going to include. The plaintiffs go on and on about a system of policies and procedures that they claim are unfair, unconscionable, so forth and so on, that have produced certain outcomes for which they seek relief. One outcome is the imposition of fees for this, for overdrafts. That's one of them. And that's the one that St. Paul likes to focus exclusively on. But they also,
what else there is, is
they've alleged that in addition to the disgorgement of fees, they want money or compensation for the damages that the policies and procedures have caused. Throughout the petition, they allege that because of these policies and procedures of not knowing their account balances and of money being taken out of their account when they don't know the money is being taken out of the account, or it's not authorized money being taken out of the account, that they have been driven into a perpetual cycle of debt. And they seek relief from this perpetual cycle of debt by alleging very clearly and very succinctly that they want three primary forms of relief. They want disgorgement of the fees. They want damages, actual damages that they say they're going to prove at trial. And they also say, which is very important, that they want injunctive relief, which is covered by this policy. They want injunctive relief to put an end to the policies and procedures that they claim have then resulted in these types of damages.
But Young's point seems to be that the reason that the not knowing my account balance is a problem for me is because now I'm going to be charged fees because I write a check thinking I have $100. I write a check for for $100, and it turned out I only had 50. Now I'm going to be charged a fee. Where in your complaint, where in the underlying petition, shall I say, does it suggest some other harm that befell me as a potential class member besides being charged the fee for overdrafting my account because I didn't know my account balance?
I think it is very much indicative in the prayer for relief. If they're drawing a distinction between the remedy of damages being the fee that was improperly assessed, which they say they're entitled to by way of disgorgement, that's clear. They set forth, separate and apart from that remedy, that they've incurred other damages. Well, what could those other damages include? What do they include? They allege that due to the fraud of the bank and due to the policies and procedures that have deprived them of accurate information about their balances and so forth, that they've been damaged. That could open the door at trial to all sorts of proof. That could be writing a bad check. That could be damage to their credit. They've left it wide open. So, and in addition, as I've said before, they seek injunctive relief, which is covered by this policy, that is extremely broad in nature. They seek to enjoin the policies and procedures, not just if they result in a fee. They seek to enjoin the policies and procedures in every regard. So not posting accurate balances, reordering the balances, the debit transactions, everything. They want to enjoin that practice in every regard. Why? So that they can always have accurate information about their account balances and so forth. So here's the fundamental difference that I have with St. Paul's argument. They want to argue that this is solely and exclusively a dispute that arises out of, claims that arise out of or attributable to a dispute involving fees. What I think the proper characterization of the underlying lawsuit is claims that arise out of or are attributable to a dispute about a broad array of policies and procedures that have produced certain outcomes, only one of which involves the fees.
Now, what about the fact that the class is defined by people who have paid fees? That's Mr. Young's argument about why the notion of fees inheres in the entire document.
The fact that you have to have a fee assessed against you in order to be joined to the party doesn't preclude those who have been joined to the party from asserting other claims, which is exactly what they have. That's the simplest response. And to focus solely on what a class allegation is ignores the rest of the complaint. And I also know that the underlying complaint wasn't certified. And I'm not suggesting that it was based on that argument, but I'm just saying that it never got litigated in court, that issue. So you have to focus on exactly what the cases tell you to focus on, and that is the eight corners rule. We have to focus on what's been alleged. And as Your Honor pointed out, the standards with which this court is very familiar can't be ignored. The question is there any potential for coverage under this policy? And more importantly, has St. Paul met their burden of proving that each and every claim, factual allegation, and potential for liability falls 100% squarely under the fee dispute exclusion. For the reasons that we've already addressed, they haven't met that burden. But there's another issue that I have to...
But are we really doing what we've said we're not supposed to do, which is hypothesizing about, like, maybe it caused me harm to not own my account balance because maybe I then, you know, wrote a check and ended up being prosecuted for a bad check and all this long thing that's not in there is what he's saying. It's not in there. So are we just, we the court, making that up?
You're not making it up, because their allegation is not that I got assessed a fee that I shouldn't have been assessed, pay it back. The allegation is that there's a broad system of policies and procedures that have driven people into unconscionable degrees of debt through bad banking practices, and then they seek damages for that. Here's another point that I'd like to raise. As Your Honor pointed out, it is St. Paul's burden to prove that each allegation, each claim, falls within the exclusion. Everything falls within the exclusion. They focus their arguments on the fact that fees are alleged. Well, fees are alleged. Of course they are. In fact, they count up how many times the word fee was used in the petition. Yes, fees are alleged. Fees are a part of the suit. But here's the question. The exclusion is not keyed off of an allegation that fees are charged. The exclusion says that it only applies the insurer shall not be liable under the professional services liability coverage for loss on account of any claim made against the insureds based upon, arising out of, attributable to, any dispute involving fees or charges for an insured services. For an insured services is a notion that is conspicuously absent from their argument. What they want to do is they want to stop after the language involving fees or charges, and then they want to count up how many times fees are mentioned. The fees or charges have to be for the insured's services.
What else would they be for?
Well, the allegations in the underlying complaint show that
the fee is a penalty by the bank saying you did something wrong and we're going to charge you a fee, then that's not for insured services. Is that the point you're making?
The point that I'm making is that there are multiple aspects of the underlying petition. One is that through these various banking practices, you've driven my account into a negative balance, and then you've covered the overdraft. Okay, if somebody makes a debit or writes a check and draws their account down, the bank covers it because they are the ones who put the customers in that situation, and then they assess the fee. The service in that regard is the overdraft, is the payment of the overdraft. But the underlying claimants also allege that the bank charged the fees even when the overdraft was never covered. So, for example, if we're going to be focusing on what the...
As a penalty. I mean, what's wrong with what I asked?
Well, the underlying...
Service that didn't happen.
Service that didn't happen. The accounts had a positive balance and a fee was assessed. Let me just point out a couple of these. Rigsby, even more egregious. Customer accounts may not actually be overdrawn at the time the overdrafts are charged. Page 1084 in the record. FNB's practice of charging overdraft fees, notwithstanding the fact that plaintiff maintained a positive balance, constitutes a breach of contract. 1092. More importantly,
isn't that a dispute about whether there was any service, which would be a dispute about fees arising out of a service?
No. What they're alleging.
Let's say I cleaned your house and you say you didn't. It's still a dispute. And I say you owe me $100 for cleaning your house. It's still a dispute about the fee I charged for your house, even though you're saying I didn't clean it.
Here's the problem with what you just said, though. The eight corners analysis requires the court to focus strictly on what has been pled. Now, they didn't plead that the bank takes dispute because the bank thinks it really did provide a service. That's nothing that can be considered. The bank's answer to the pleadings. The court's eight corners analysis focuses on what's alleged. If you assume what is alleged
is... alleged is that you charged for a service you didn't perform. Isn't that arising out of fees for a service?
You charged money and never performed a service. That's expressly what they're alleging. You can't then conclude that all of the allegations fall within what the exclusion requires, and that is that the underlying plaintiffs pled that there is a fee dispute for services when they're saying, and the gravamen of their complaint is, you didn't provide services. The class description, as Durham's characterizes it, who are members of this class, here's Durham's allegations. All FNB customers in the United States who, within the applicable statute of limitations preceding the filing of this action to the date of class certification, incurred any overdraft fee as a result of FNB's practices of resequencing financial transactions from highest to lowest and by assessing overdraft fees even when a customer had sufficient funds in their account. For instance, when a customer transaction was declined by the bank, declined, meaning we're not paying it, when a customer transaction was declined for insufficient funds and no transaction was processed or funds expended by the bank on behalf of the customer, FNB nevertheless repeatedly charged unlawful and egregious fees to the customers in a fraudulent manner. That is an allegation that the bank is charging fees not for a service. That's what they're alleging, and that's the only thing that can be construed in the context of an eight corners analysis.
Is there any allegation in these complaints about damage to credit standing or damage to reputation for a check that bounced when, in fact, the check bounced was because the customer didn't understand how much was in his account?
Those, the characterization of the damages are not set out in those terms. But as I said before, they do allege things more broadly that due to the banking practices, these customers have been driven into a cycle of debt that has resulted in damages for which they seek relief separate from the disgorgement of the fee.
And these are Texas state petitions, which are not subject to Twombly and Iqbal. I mean, there's general allegations.
They're Texas state petitions.
That's so they're correct. Subject to just general.
That's correct.
Allegations, and when we're looking at them, we look at them in that light.
Correct. And also, the other point that's somewhat related to the four services notion that I also want to point out is when you look through the underlying petition and you construe it liberally, as the court must in the context of an eight corners analysis, there's another thing that comes to light, and that is that what these plaintiffs allege, in addition to the notion that you drove accounts into a negative balance and you charged fees, which is one aspect of it. The other aspect is you charged fees even when you never covered an overdraft and therefore never performed a service. Another aspect of the underlying petition is that you took money out of the accounts when you had no authorization to do so, and therefore you stole the money. Conversion and theft. Here's what's important about that. The bank never defined what fee means in their exclusion. What's a fee? What is a fee? So they didn't define it. So if you look at common meaning of fee, and I checked out Black's Law Dictionary, fee implies for a service. Somebody does something for you, usually professional in nature, and they assess a fee for that service. What this appeal raises, given the language of the exclusion, is if somebody has a relationship with a customer, if I have a relationship with a customer that gives me access to the customer's account, and I start drawing money out, I'm just taking money, is that a fee? Because that's what they're alleging. They are alleging that in instances the bank never performed a service, never covered an overdraft, and without any legal authorization whatsoever, began debiting money out of their accounts. And those factual allegations are set forth very succinctly in connection with fraud allegations, in connection with theft allegations, in connection with conversion allegations. It simply cannot be said that when the allegation is you, bank, had access to our accounts and you illegally debited money without performing a single service, it simply cannot be said that that dispute arises out of or is attributable to a dispute over fees for a service.
You're fixing to run out of time, so do you want to talk about the duty of good faith as it may or may not apply here?
With respect to the cross appeal issue, St. Paul moved for summary judgment on the duty of good faith and fair dealing claim that was also asserted by the bank.
Are you claiming a common law duty of good faith or a statutory one? And if it's statutory, tell me the statute.
So the pleading sets forth very clearly breach of common law duty of good faith and fair dealing. And I think that that's the...
You're limited. You're just talking about common law duty of good faith.
Their argument was that your pleadings don't allege any other potential cause of action. And I argued that because of the incorporated by reference language, a statutory duty was incorporated into the pleading, and that set forth in Chapter 542.
Okay. Which section of 542? Be specific. Exactly what am I looking for to see whether there is such a duty in this context?
It's Section 542.003, subsection B,
okay,
which tracks the common law standard.
Okay. And so what is your best case... current law, because there's been a lot of evolution in this area of Texas law, that says that you have such a cause of action in this context.
The best case is this court's decision in Reuters versus State Farm Lloyds, 428, Federal Appendix 441, 2011 opinion, which acknowledges the duty exists and that these are the claims that were asserted in the underlying case. So the other, in my remaining minute and 26, just real quick, I wanted to point out, actually I wanted to go back to the other issue unless you have any other questions on the duty of good faith issue. I wanted to go back to some of the case law that I think is so important to the court's analysis of the applicability of this exclusion. We've cited the Ace case, as well as the Hartford Casualty versus Chase and the Ticketmaster's case. And all of those cases construe exclusions that are very similar. And they involve situations where the essence of what's been alleged is not just a dispute about the fee. There's more to it than that. And I wanted to point out specifically in the Chase, the Hartford versus Chase case, the exclusion states or pertains to disputes over fees, commissions, deposits, premiums, or charges made for services rendered or which should have been rendered. And in finding coverage, one of the things that the court pointed out is that this goes beyond a dispute about the fee. And then they put a footnote in that opinion that explained, well, what else is there? And one of the items that they are pointing to is that there's an allegation in the underlying case that they misrepresented that all the fees they were charging was for work actually performed. That's this case. It's the same. So I see that my time is up. I respectfully ask the court to affirm the judgment with respect to the duty to defend issue and reverse and remand with respect to the extra contractual claim.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Knight.
Thank you.
Mr. Young, you've saved time for rebuttal.
May it please the court. My colleague says that the court must look at each and every factual allegation. I submit to you that's not quite right. The court must look at each and every factual allegation that is the origin of the claim for damages or other relief. In addition to the opening paragraph of the Rigsby case, which I quoted to the court, there is another paragraph I'd like to call the court's attention. Paragraph 69, as a consequence of FNB's overdraft policies and practices, plaintiff and the class have been wrongfully, doesn't say damaged, says charged overdraft fees. So we think that when you look at the injury-causing allegations, the allegations of the injury that has been caused, Judge Barksdale, you will not find any allegation that someone was prosecuted for a hot check or, you know, unable to pay their bills because they thought they had more money than they should have had, or than they did have, or anything like that. You will not find those allegations in the complaint. What you will find is allegations of fees.
All right, what about his point that just helping yourself to somebody's bank account isn't really a fee?
That may be so, but it's not a professional service either. The court needs to remember that this exclusion is an exclusion to the professional services coverage. So my colleague's argument about fees for non-existent services walks himself right out of the professional service coverage of the policy. If you look at the definition of professional services and professional services act, you will find that it is the rendition of a service pursuant to a contract between the insured and a customer, such as the honoring of overdrafts. Stealing money out of customers' accounts is not a professional service, so it would not be covered in any event. With respect,
so lawyer's malpractice policy, absent an exclusion specifically on embezzlement, would not cover a charge that they mishandled the trust account or mishandled the trust funds of the client.
That's my understanding, although that would be governed by that policy's language, and this policy is specifically designed for financial institutions and the rendition of professional services.
I started arguing professional services generally.
Well, that would be right. That would be by analogy. With respect to the extra contractual claims, if counsel says his best case is Reuters, I submit he's in trouble. Reuters is, first of all, a non-precedential case. Secondly, when you look at Reuters, it never says there is a private right of action under 542 subchapter A. What it said was there is no coverage, therefore there is no viable claim under 542.003. That's a far cry from saying if there had been coverage, then there would be, particularly when Reuters goes on and says Article 2121-2 does not create a private cause of action. The Court of Appeal, the Supreme Court said so in Watson, and that statute is precisely the statutory predecessor to 542.003A. So Reuters actually is a case supporting our position, because it says that the predecessor statute, which was recodified without substantive change, does not create a private cause of action under Watson. And before this court were inclined to rule otherwise, it would have to consider what has changed in the interim. The only thing that the cross-appellant points to is the Lamar Holmes case. The Lamar Holmes case dealt with a very specific statute that referred to and was governed by whether or not something was a first-party claim. Labels mattered. And the court said, yes, defense costs are a first-party claim within the meaning of that statute. That's a very different proposition from saying...
Y'all have settled that here, so we're not...
We've contingently settled it on the outcome of this appeal.
So you're not asking us to rule on the...
That is correct. That is correct. If this court were otherwise inclined to say the rule of Maryland maybe got changed by Lamar Holmes, or the rule of Watson with respect to the statutory claim maybe got changed by Lamar Holmes, it would have to think about whether that is consonant with its role as an Erie court, predicting what the Supreme Court of Texas would do, and we submit it would require a much more clear signal from the Supreme Court than the Lamar Holmes case, which deals with a different statute that's not an issue here, would give the court. Unless the court has anything else.
All right, thank you, Mr. Young. Your case is under submission. Last case for today.